You're listening to the Social Selling Simplified Podcast. Stick around if you too are obsessed with learning things that actually work and believe that success leaves clues. We're all about identifying results-producing roadmaps and getting super clear on how to scale and grow your online business. From part-timer to president, social selling expert Ashley Shaw will help you connect the dots and take the guesswork out of what works to grow a social selling empire. It's time to hear from social selling legends, listen in on truthful conversations, and learn the best tips and tricks to reduce the marketing overwhelm so you can build a social selling business of your dreams. If you're ready to go all in, no holding back, and build the business you've always wanted, you're in the right place. Here's your host, educator, social selling guru, and fitness industry OG, Ashley Shaw.
Welcome to Social Selling Simplified. I'm your host, Ashley Shaw, and today I have Amy Wine here, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She has a large private counseling practice in Texas. She is the creator of Marriage on Fire, which has various done-for-you courses, as well as a membership, actually, that teaches couples how to reignite their marriage. And she has been married for 21 years with 3 kids, 4 dogs, and 2 of them named Zoe. So welcome to the show, Amy. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I am so pumped. It's such a pleasure to get to not only talk to you, because you're super fun to talk to. Amy and I met in a mastermind, actually, and we were roomies. Yeah. And we had so much fun having some margaritas and chatting all things therapy over dinner. But I don't know if the therapist space is the right word, but I love all things that have to do with bettering yourself and just learning about, in essence, just be a happier person and a happier person in your family and your marriage. I think the timing of this episode is so perfect. So Amy, let's dive into your story a little bit about how you came to be running your counseling practice as well as becoming a licensed marriage and family therapist.
Man, that story could take like a lifetime. So I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version. It's so convoluted, but I grew up in an extremely abusive household. So with my mother and stepfather, and I didn't really have contact with my biological father at the time, just off and on. I mean, I knew him. I saw him maybe once a year. And my grandmothers on my dad's side were really my influence that I will say saved me, because I knew there was another way of life. But the abuse was physical, mental, sexual. It went on from 4 to 18. At 18, I left and I lived in my car. So I actually graduated high school on my 18th birthday, and I never went back. So I had snuck everything I could into my car, and I swore I wasn't going back. So I lived in my car. I lived in middle of nowhere, Oklahoma at the time. So I snuck into the back of people's farmland at night, and that's where I would sleep. Then, you know, it's funny, I went, had a full ride to the University of Oklahoma, and I did go the first year, and I flunked out because I had a social life for 1 year. It was the best move. After that, I was working a temp job, and I was 19, and this guy walked off, and I have to tell you, because my husband has such a big part of this story. I was working a temp job for an oil company, and it was back in the switchboard days where there was like 600 phone lines to answer, and they were constantly going off. And this guy walks off the elevator, and my very first thought, never seen him before, was, I'm going to marry that man. My second thought was, you have lost your ever loving mind. And I went back to answering the phones, right? So he ended up for the next 2 weeks sitting in the waiting room with me constantly for hours. They would leave him there. They were his client. And we would talk. So he asked me out, and we started dating pretty quick. And then we didn't get married for 8 years because I was crazy in my 20s. I had a lot of stuff to get over. But somehow he put up with me through that. We had moved to Houston in the middle of that. I found myself working for his competing oil field service company, actually. But there was a man there. His name was Murray Colgan. And he changed my world. He got me into college. I went at night. The company paid for it if I got an A or B. He told me about the program. He treated me like I was his daughter's. So I just started going to school and just working. And I did this for years. And then we got married, had babies. I quit my job, went back home. And then about second baby on the way, I thought, I wonder how many hours of school I got left, because I really probably should finish this. And because I'm always needing something to do. And I was not the best stay-at-home mom. Like, I loved it and I loved the babies, but I needed something else to do. So I went and I realized, oh, I'm only one class away from two different associate's degrees. So I went back online, got my bachelor's at Liberty University. And then I had another baby and another baby. And then I decided, when they started going to elementary school, I got restless again. And I thought, I really need to do something. So I did alternative teaching certification in Texas and I became a teacher. And I loved it because I love kids. Like, that has always been my passion. And I taught at my kids' school, so they would go with me and come home with me. But then that last year, I moved to a different school that was only like 2 minutes from my house. But I had homeless kids next to doctor's kids and a lot of social issues going on. Mm-hmm. And that whole year, I thought, I just want to talk to your kids. I don't really want to teach them to read. I mean, it was like... It kept coming and coming. I was like, this is not good. So I, just by the luck of God, I found a grad school in Houston that was actually a seminary school. So God's got a sense of humor, because me in a seminary, you got to laugh at that. And it was close enough to my house. It was affordable. So I went home and I said, hey, babe, I'm going to quit my job. This is like April. And I'm going to quit my job that I've only had for a short time. That was only 1 year at this school. And I'm gonna go back to grad school. So school's out like on May 31st and I'm gonna start school June 2nd and I'm gonna finish in 2 years. And he's like, you're what? Like, you just got that job. So I went back to grad school. I did finish in 2 years. It was rough because I knew with every fiber of my being, I was meant to be a counselor. So I know that's a long way there to tell you that, but I have one more thing is, fast forward 6-7 years, I went back and watched my wedding video last year and I'd never seen it. The guy messed up. It was only the raw data. It was on a VHS tape. Like, we don't even have a VCR. So I sent it off to one of those companies to get it back. And they asked me a question in it. I don't even remember saying it. They said, and this was in 1998, they said, if you could have one job that would fulfill you the rest of your life, what would it be? And I said, a child counselor. Not crazy. It gives you chills.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah, I think there's a lot of trauma out there, like more than we realize. The more we talk about it and share those journeys, the more, not that it's not about normalizing it, but I just mean the connection that you have with so many other people. But I think it's so important that how you've used it to serve others and for good. There's so much, I think, hope in that. There's just a lot of stuff that unfortunately happens. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible that you have the dots of all of that happening, how you've just used it for good and to help other people. And that's a really inspiring and important story. So I'm so happy you shared that.
Thank you. I remember sitting in therapy. I did therapy in my 20s for 2 years to get over my crazy. Because when I said I was crazy, I was a lunatic. Like, I did some stuff that I'm not very proud of. But also knew there was something else out there. I remember when the therapist said to me, you know, you shouldn't be here, right? And I was like, well, where should I be? I didn't get it. He goes, well, statistics say you should be dead. You should be a prostitute. You should be on drugs or in prison, like 80 to 90%. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at him and said, well, I'm not. So now what? I mean, I kind of had this callous thing to like, I don't even know why you're saying this to me. It really bothered me. I didn't get it until about 5 years later, the significance. When I asked him now what, he started laughing. He's like, well, when God catches you, it's going to be good. And when you find your path, it's going to be so good. So, and what's funny is this counselor actually in the last 6 months just built an office around the corner from my same area. Like, I haven't seen him in 15 years, but I know without a shadow of a doubt, it's my purpose. Like, I know that. And I used to work solely with kids. Now I work mostly with couples. And I'll tell you why, is because I found that I can work with the kid a lot, but if I don't work with what's at the top of the family pyramid, which is the parents, I cannot change a lot for that child. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, not saying that's a bad family, but let's say the child has trauma and the parents are bringing them in and it's not anything to do with them, but they don't know how to process that and they don't know how to parent that and understand it. So you don't have to have this whole dysfunctional family to need mental health care. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love working with the couples. Plus the divorce rate is so high that if people would just talk in a different way and I could teach them how to talk differently, you change everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I realized you and I had so much in common, but the story of what you've just told, it makes me realize we have even more in common. Starting with the moment that I saw my husband, I also knew I was going to marry him. Not sure how that was going to happen, but I knew that right away. And I did a ton of therapy when I was, I guess it would have been 18, 19, around that age. I had had a pretty traumatic, in a different way, sort of childhood. I lost my best friend when I was in grade 9. She committed suicide. Yeah, definitely a hard age, a hard thing to understand. It actually, now that I'm pregnant, it's interesting what's coming up for me is I have this adversity or this feeling of childhood is so hard. I don't want to put my kid in regular school. It was so hard. And it's almost because of that experience for me, it makes me worried about what my children are going to go through, you know, and what their childhood is going to be like. So it's interesting because I'm recognizing it, but it makes me want to protect homeschool. I'll do whatever I can. And I had one other thing that I guess, you know, my parents didn't pick up on when I told them there was some stuff going on with our male nanny, that he was trying some things he shouldn't have been trying. And I wasn't really believed that, or it didn't really register that this person probably shouldn't be in our house. But what it did is it really set me on a path for how I operated after that. When I met with people, it was like empathy at the highest degree, because I knew everyone just had stuff going on. And, you know, there were some, maybe some unresolved things. But it's interesting, I think, how much therapy at that age, for me in my 20s, it made me grow up maybe quicker, but have this super deep understanding of what was sort of going on around me. It was almost like I had someone tell me once, I don't know if she said the cliche, like you're wise beyond your years, but just the life experience, you know, after going through something like that.
Absolutely. I think it does make an impact. And if you can get the counseling instead of stuffing it down, which so many people do through it, even at a younger age, because it comes back up. And for me, mine was in my late 20s when I got pregnant. And mine really hit me like, oh my gosh, I cannot have a child with the mental space that I am in. Like, that scared me because there was no way I was going to let what happened to me happen to my child. So I tend to get the whole one to put them in a bubble. But I'll tell you, somebody said this to me, and then I've kind of added to it, is the only thing that we can do for our children is to protect them as much as we can without suffocating them, but they have to have their own life experiences, and we have to trust that we're going to make parenting mistakes, of course, but that we parent them in such a way that they're going to know the right and wrong decision to make. Even when they have their own failures at some times, then we can come back around behind them, but we've got to let them have their own mistakes, their own failures, their own everything. And my kids will say I'm overprotective. Like, my kids, my girls especially, were not allowed to go to somebody's house to spend the night if I did not really, really know them. I would not allow a male nanny in the house. There's just things that come from experiences. But I also knew that I had to let go a little bit and just trust, especially I have teenagers now, trust that they know the difference. And you're going to be such a great mom to them that. I also like that you keep it real. So I hear that in counseling all the time. And I only really get clients on referrals anymore. I don't see too many clients because I'm doing it a lot online, but I do marriage intensives now. So I'll sit with a couple for 2 or 3 days time and we'll do everything in those 2 to 3 days. And then they'll check in a few months. But I am not the type of counselor that just sits here and says, well, how does that make you feel? No, I am pretty interactive because I had had several therapists before I found the one I was with for 2 years. And they didn't work because they weren't interactive. Like, I don't go just to try to figure it out on myself. I do want some guidance. So I do love to give people options or a different way of reframing it and thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they can tell me, no, that doesn't work for me. Or, oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that style. And it took me a while to find the right person. And I always needed a different person at a different time.
Absolutely.
But, and I think sometimes where people can struggle is they may know that it would be great to talk to someone, but it's a process. It's like dating. You're trying to find that right fit.
It is. And I get this question a lot of how do you find a therapist that's the right fit? So we have 16 counselors in my office now. We've grown a lot in the 3.5 years. So I always will tell them this. I think follow the counselor. Like if you're thinking about it, you don't usually just pick up the phone and call. Mm-hmm. You have to sit with that for a little bit. And there have to be, you know, you have to kind of watch the counseling center. What are they putting out on social media? What's the bio? Is it speaking to you? There's so many ways now you can kind of track a counselor and see if they're a fit and if you're getting a feel for them. We often say that if you come here and you meet with the counselor, like we have it very much when you call counseling centers, and ours is very, not all, but ours is very intentional. Like we train our front desk person so much on being the right fit. So she talks to that person 10 or 15 minutes, and then she makes sure she matches them with somebody that has the specialty that they need, or maybe younger age versus an older person or vice versa. So we try to match them up front, but if they do not feel it's a fit or they're not sure, I will actually pay for them to go see somebody else in the counseling center. And we tell them, you get to tell us that, like, it's not going to hurt our feelings because we're here for you, not the other way around. So,
yeah.
And there's a lot of not quality counselors out there, sadly, but if people do shop around, do get a feel. And if you don't feel that connection in the first couple sessions, it's okay to try again and shop around for it. At the same time, that's the most difficult phone call anybody's going to make, right? It's one of the most. So they don't want to keep making it over and over again. So people will sit in a bad counselor relationship, and people just aren't to match with everybody. Doesn't mean either one of them's wrong. It just doesn't do that. So I just encourage people to really jump out there. And if you're going to do it, it's okay to go try a couple, even if it's one.
Yeah. And I think that there's a big connection between sometimes what counselors or therapists leave you with at the end of that session. One thing I found super effective is I love getting homework. Like, go read this book, go do this, journal this. I want to have some takeaways because it's one thing to be able to talk through those things, but I'm a digester. I need to take things home and think about them. So I think that's somehow being able to get a handle on that. Like, what do you actually want to walk out with? Because I've been to counselors before where I was feeling pretty low, especially after the 2 losses of failed pregnancies. I was just new. I recalled that feeling, you know, of grief and, you know, knowing, okay, I got to do something. I got to call someone and get something happening, get the wheels in motion. And I met this woman that was a counselor, and she was not the traditional type I had been to before. I had usually gone to, I think she was a psychotherapist in the past and had done some, like, I used to lay on this meditation bed and do some deep inner body work. And I just loved it. It worked so well for me.
Yeah.
And so her style was different. It was, we're going to sit and talk about these things. And I remember leaving that session, the way I went into it was feeling, I don't know if she's going to be able to help me, not the same designation as the other one that really helped me. I felt like a weight had just been lifted off my shoulders in one session. And I had these Oprah podcasts I had to go listen to and these things. And I didn't end up having to go back. It was crazy. That never happens usually.
I love that.
Yeah, but it was magical.
It doesn't usually. And I would just encourage people, if they're going to go, to speak up about what they want to get out of it. And it's the counselor's job to meet them there. I ask and I try to ascertain it. Like, I find some people don't feel comfortable telling me what they want or need. And really, mm-hmm. they're the best driver of that. Now, I may pick up on some things that they don't see and suggest, but there's a lot of people that don't want homework, right? That's mm-hmm. too much. Yep. And if we push them too far, too fast, they run the other way. But then there's the you and I who, like, you better give me something else to do because I'm going to be here doing this. I'm doing the work.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Effort. So people just need to be upfront and not afraid to tell their therapist that it's not what they're looking for. Because it could be just a gentle shift with them and they still be okay for you. Or find another one. I love the whole meditating and laying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found the practice of meditation, whether it was in this sessions that I did, it was interesting. You may be familiar with this type of practice. I had never seen anything like this before. But I would go to these sessions and she would have this massage table mm-hmm. and I would lay on the table. She would talk to, you know, the inner child and do that sort of work, which for anybody that doesn't know what that is, this is one of my favorite things I learned in therapy about the inner child. This person that we were before we were ever told, no, you can't do that or you shouldn't do it that way. This uninhibited version of ourselves before we knew what anyone else thought mm-hmm. and going back to that place of who you are as an inner child. And then in these sessions, she would actually take like my hands or my feet and just wiggle them to see how much tension was there. Uh-huh. And then talk through different places of where I was holding different things in my body. Yeah. So it was very woo woo. And this would be 15 years ago, uh-huh. you know, but it was so interesting to make that connection between what's going on in your body and where it feels tight and what you're holding on to and what that represents. Mm-hmm. And then really when you recognize, I think you can release. Yeah. And it was a really crazy experience, but it was so cool.
It sounds kind of like Reiki healing.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That would make sense. Yeah.
I how you say it, but yeah, your body's going to tell you what's wrong before your brain does.
Mm-hmm.
So you can start to learn your body signs, like kids with anger. And then I do this with adults and they take it like on a kid level and they always laugh at me. I'm like, well, we're here. But anger is so much in your body. And if you can learn to start to mm-hmm. recognize the sweaty palms, the heart racing, mm-hmm. the tension, the all of those things of stomach ache, whatever, or an anxiety as well is there before. Mm-hmm. So you recognize the signs in your body, you can start to change it, mm-hmm. do coping skills, and fix all the stuff going on before it goes to your brain and you get overwhelmed with it. Okay, we're angry in our brain, but let's go backwards. What happened before that in our body? Because then they'll start to recognize, oh my gosh, I was clenching my fists. Right. Or I get this eye twitch or something. Okay, well, now we know when that happens, I'm getting ready to blow my top. So you have a few seconds to start mitigating what your reaction would be. Maybe you were going to yell or scream, but now we've got a little window of time for you to walk away.
Hmm. Wow, I love that. It brings it into focus for me. This week has been a bit of a hard week, harder than normal. I think, you know, with everything going on, just in the weight of what's happening in the world, that's playing on, I think, everyone's mind in the background there or on the forefront, depending on where you're at. But I had one of those moments this week where I just felt I could have a moment of ugly crying and just this overwhelm that took over me. And I'm thinking, is it mom hormones? Are we just like, where's this overwhelm coming from? And when we talk about how that manifests itself, I started to notice triggers, certain things that were going on with my team were happening. Mm-hmm. And so I was sort of noticing it was triggering me into feeling a little bit overwhelmed. And I'm reading Atomic Habits. So I'm noticing, okay, when this happens, it's causing this. Mm-hmm. But it was almost manifesting more in my body first, like a lump in my chest of like, I can't breathe. I'm overwhelmed.
Absolutely. And anxiety will do that. It'll actually make you short of breath. So I was talking to a woman this last week who felt like she had the coronavirus, but she hadn't been out of her house in 3 weeks. She had no contact. Uh-huh. So I'm like, okay, well, you can't have it. It's like grocery delivery or anything. I don't know how she did that, but she was having shortness of breath because of her anxiety being up. So right now, yeah, some of it could be pregnancy hormones, but right now with everything going on with this virus, everybody in the world is affected. So mm-hmm. you're having change and trauma come at you from all angles, right? Mm-hmm. Usually mm-hmm. we only have one trauma at a time or one change at mm-hmm. a time. You know how they say, don't get married, have a baby and buy a house in the same year, right? Yeah. Okay. So, cause that's too much in 1 year. Yeah. And uh-huh. yeah. So think about that. In just a short few days, we've had to stop working. We've had to stay in our mm-hmm. house. We've got to carry hand sanitizer. We have to wear masks. Mm. We cannot get in with our families. We cannot mm-hmm. socialize except for we have happy hour on Zoom now. Like mm-hmm. the world has changed in the past few weeks to the likes we've never seen. Mm-hmm. Then you have job loss and you have kids at home. So people are trying to work 8-hour days. Mm-hmm. So people are trying to do all the things. So they're being teacher, wife, husband, mom, you know, dad, grocery getter, food, you know, all of these things. Mm-hmm. And we're not built to do that many things. Mm-hmm. And they're cratering. Oh, and homeschooling, right? So you mm-hmm. had a full-time job. Now you got homeschooling. So I think that the anxiety and the stress of all the change and the trauma just coming up, you are going to feel it in your body. And it's going to come out in waves of crying, anger, mm-hmm. low patience levels, headaches, stomach aches. So we have to be really intentional about our day of not putting much pressure on ourselves for what we have to accomplish, letting some of it go, because we can't be all those things to all those people. But finding 15 minutes for self is so important because, especially for people that have children at home too, your children are watching this and they're going to ramp up if you're ramped up.
Yeah.
So go take your 15 minutes and figure out what self-soothes you. That may be listening to your headphones in your closet or something, but that's what happened in my house. But I do think it's definitely starts in your body.
I love that you shared that. It made me think of, I had a therapist once tell me that when you're a highly operating individual, you're highly functioning, it's easy to minimize the impact of these huge things going on. And whether it's something like what we're dealing with right now with that whole laundry list of things that you just mentioned, or something going on with grief, losing someone, divorce, a pet, something traumatic happening, it's really easy to minimize that and say, I'm pushing forward and I'm just going. But to take that moment to recognize just how many things are impacting us right now and how many shifts that is, it's important to have that grace for ourselves and, you know, give ourselves that space.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I have high anxiety, so I know what it feels like personally to do it. And I'll tell you one tip that I have to tell almost everybody because they don't realize it is, when all you're listening to or reading is negativity, negativity breeds negativity. But a lot of people will just leave that news channel on in their house and not even pay attention. Maybe they're doing laundry and they're cooking or whatever. And they feel like, oh, well, it's not really that big a deal because it's not, I'm not paying attention. But it is, because it's seeping into your brain when you don't even think it is. Like all of that you're hearing and your brain is taking it in at the same time you're doing laundry and cooking. So it's ramping up your anxiety. So I am like, turn it off. Check the news. If you're a news junkie or you need to know, like, first of all, somebody's going to tell you if something major happens probably before you need to go look. Like somebody's going to call you or text you, or do a check-in, more breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then turn it off. And with other family members in the house, whether it's elderly grandparents or siblings, or, you know, we have extended families all coming together and staying in the same house now, our children, all of that's going in there. And it's creating their own trauma symptoms for somebody that normally would not associate it with a trauma.
That's so interesting. I remember reading a stat about watching the news for 3 minutes a day and how much it impacted the rest of your day, just in terms of that negativity. And as humans, we're already looking for that to protect ourselves, those survival skills, right? And so, yeah, I think it's so easy to go on autopilot and be, I need to be in the know with what's going on. And yet, one, the news is, there's a lot of speculating on what's going to happen. Right. And when you really think of, is the juice worth the squeeze there?
Yeah.
What did you really learn? You know, and okay, have your check-in points. We try to do that news check-ins, but I do find that the less on that that I am, the less anxiety I'm feeling. And it's easy to think it's, yeah, it's just unconscious. You're just, okay, this is how we do things now. We watch the news, but yeah, so important.
Yeah, it becomes your day-to-day routine and we don't think anything of it. And then all of a sudden we're like crashing and having all of these emotional reactions. And we're like, I don't understand why. Well, it's because your input has been there even in the background the whole time. And there is studies in the brain and in the body that have shown TV news input will escalate anxiety, depression, brain waves, for sure. And I think you're right. A lot of it is the speculation right now that nobody knows. But then people start worrying about the what ifs.
Yeah.
And that just escalates it some more, because now we're like, oh, well, they said, and then they said, oh, what if that happens? Like, we're going to be here until, you know, next year. I saw something yesterday. We're going to be here for 18 months. I'm like, there is no way I can do that. Immediately sent me in the,
It just puts you into living in the future, which is where all anxiety lives. And So I think that what is so valuable would be to talk about what are some healthy habits that we can put into place to focus on our daily routine to make sure we're setting ourselves up for success. I love that tip that you shared there about, you know, if you really need to watch the news, set a time limit, get your check-in, but then shut it off. Don't just have it playing in the background. What other things do you think are important right now to help keep us focused in the positive and just day-to-day able to manage some of those emotions?
I have actually 10 categories. That may sound overwhelming, but 10 categories of things I can briefly talk to that people need to think about. But right now, in the midst of this, the number one thing is get a routine. And even for those of us that don't like routines and don't want that much structure, the other people around you need it and your body does, or else you're going to find yourself days and days on end. Like, all I do is get up and go to bed, get up and go to bed. And I know I was feeling that. It's all I was doing, doing a million things, but I was not taking the time to do like my morning routine or things that I was previously doing. So definitely get out like a weekly calendar and do what I call kind of your ideal week. What do you want it to look like? Now, don't put the pressure that you got to be 100% accurate, but kind of try to schedule out in these categories. So like your intellectual, what are you trying to learn right now? Oh, see, yes, I love that. And this comes from Michael Hyatt. Like, I love Michael Hyatt. So I've been in his business accelerator for a couple years now, and I love what he's done. It has changed my entire world from working 100-hour weeks to I'm maybe at the office 4 hours a day. Some days right now worse than others, but intellectual. I think you always need to be learning something or reading something or listening to something educational. And it doesn't matter what it is, whatever interests you, because that keeps you from being stuck and staying in anxiety. The other one is if you are a parent, parental, what are you doing with your kids? So right now, we always say, well, when I was a kid, we didn't have Xbox, or when I was a kid, we didn't have cell phones. Well, I was a kid, this. Our kids don't know that world. But right now, we've been given the gift of teaching them that. So pull them out of their bedrooms, pull them off of the electronics, and go throw the Frisbee. These things don't have to cost much money, you know? Do a treasure hunt, something you could just do. Like, teach them what you did as a kid. Spiritual. If you're spiritual, I say start every morning with at least 10 minutes. because it's just going to set you on the right path. So whatever that it means for you, the first 10 minutes of your day, even if you've got to get up 10 minutes before the kids, that will reset every single day for you. Emotional. Check your emotional wherewithal that day. And don't be afraid to go into what I call survival mode, meaning we only do what we have to do that day to get through the day. Everything else can wait. It doesn't have to be done. Social. We are social people. We still need socialness. So what I'm finding is the first week, everybody was trying to be social, right? In this virus, everybody's planning happy hours or on Zoom or whatever. They're FaceTiming friends and family. Somewhere in the second week, the anxiety crept up. And now I'm seeing people isolate. They can't even process getting on a Zoom happy hour because our anxiety, depression is going up. So they're isolating themselves and it actually makes it worse. So force yourself to have one social interaction, whether it's a phone call, a Zoom call, a Facebook call with a friend. Vocational is your job. So if you're especially coming in and working in a home environment and you're, that's not what you're done. Like most, a lot of entrepreneurs, especially online ones, are used to this. They're like, hey, this is what we do every day. But the majority of people are not. They don't know how to manage their time. So definitely sit and structure. This is when I'm working and this is when I'm not, especially the 9-to-5ers or whatever. They need that physical. It's the first thing we forget to do, which I know that's your world is the physical. So move. I don't care if you're just walking around the block doing jumping jacks. If you can move, I actually set an alarm on my phone. I learned this from Brendan Burchard at one of his events. That at the 45 minutes, so 9:45, 10:45, 11:45, especially if I'm doing nothing but working, I stop it and I move for 5 minutes. And it brings your energy back up so you can make it through the day. Mm-hmm. Avocational is your hobbies. Right now we have so much going on. So those are going away. I just learned about adult paint by numbers. Like I didn't know that was a thing. So my daughters and I are now painting the Disney castle and I can't paint to save my life. But finding something that brings you joy. Marriage, being intentional about it. A lot of marriage stress right now. Talking to your spouse, not blaming, criticizing, being defensive when they bring it up. Like just speaking from a place of you, I feel this because of this, and this is why. Not you never, you always. That's just going to create conflict. And then the last one's financial. And that's where a lot of marriage stress is coming in. I'm actually doing a live workshop, well, next week, on marriage and money. And then we'll put it online. But because the stress of finances and the unknown of what's going to happen, even for people that have kept their jobs, is so high that it's usually one partner in the marriage that handles most of the finances most of the time. And their stress is going up and they don't feel like they can talk about it without it being an argument or more stress. So there's my quick 10. Find it. And if you can't do all 10, pick 2 to 4 to start with. Like we're not looking for perfection.
And would this be something you would recommend when you look at your ideal week, your scheduling in time for this stuff?
Absolutely. So I was the biggest resistant when I started with Michael Hyatt of doing the ideal week. It took me 6 months to even try to buy in because I don't want to have to be saying, okay, every morning at 7:30, this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. But in order to be successful and I'm running 2 businesses and have 3 children and my personal health, I have to do it. I get more done. Being intentional about these 10 areas than I do when I'm just kind of loosey-goosey and saying,
yeah.
And last week, my stress was higher because I went off my ideal week. I wasn't doing it. I was getting done what I had to get done, but my stress and anxiety was off the charts, but only because I wasn't being focused about what I need to do.
So if people want to learn more about the ideal week, where's the best place for them to learn about that?
Actually, through Michael Hyatt, the Full Focus Planner, there's a website called the Full Focus Planner. And you don't even have to have his planner, but there's so many tips on there about work-life balance.
Love that.
He's like the king of it. I love it. I can't even speak highly enough about it.
That's awesome. And Amy, where is the best place for people to connect with you and find out about your upcoming workshops and all the amazing stuff you have going on?
I have a website. It's amywine.com, and all of the Marriage on Fire membership, the Spark Reignite Your Marriage course, those are all on there. The Marriage and Money workshop is going up actually soon. And then on Instagram and Facebook at the Amy Wine. Yes, like the drink, W-I-N-E. Everybody's like, how do you spell it? I'm like the drink. Now you'll never forget me.
I love it. Thank you so much, Amy, for everything that you've shared with us. So many great things to be able to work from this list. And I already feel just the anxiety dissipating. So thank you so much. I really appreciate
you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for listening to Social Selling Simplified. Now, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode, because you never know when there's going to be a guest or a topic that absolutely changes your business and changes your life. I'd also love for you to leave us an honest review that we can definitely be in touch with what you want to hear more of and what topics are really making an impact in your business. Now, if you want to take it a step further, there is an awesome quiz that we've put together to help you understand what you need to do to grow your social selling business. Now, when you go to ashleyshaw.ca/quiz, you're going to be able to discover the biggest priorities in your business, how to remove roadblocks, and hone in on where to spend your time and create the social selling business of your dreams. And that's at ashleyshaw.ca/quiz. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on Social Selling Simplified.